Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA Plus, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Now, I don't know when you're listening to this, but is it a coincidence that we are talking about St. Paul and the Broken Bones at Bonnaroo 2018 on Easter Sunday? Pretty appropriate that we chose St. Paul and the Broken Bones for Easter Sunday
That's
service.
Right. Yeah. Serendipity.
Yes, it is indeed. Welcome to the What Podcast, a Bonnaroo podcast for Bonnarooians by Bonnarooians, we being the Bonnarooians. That's Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. I'm Brad Steiner from Hits 96 Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Welcome to maybe my favorite moment of my entire professional career.
Ah, wow.
I loved this so much.
Yeah, when we started talking to him, as you guys will hear when we start rolling the tape, I thought I was going to have to separate Brad and and Paul, even though it was over the phone. Yeah. It was a little fanboyish.
I was tongue-kissing the microphone. I love St. Paul and the Broken Bones so much, as you will hear, but the reason I loved this so much is I had a conversation with a campmate of ours. We were talking, if you know anything about our camp is called Camp Nut Butter. We've had the same dozen people camp with us for a long, long time. And one of our campmates, the guy that did all the graphics for the What Podcast, his name's Nick Turner. Me and him almost share a brain when it comes musically. We could not be more tied to each other. He calls me up out of the blue the other day and he says, man, I just had, well, he talked to me, man, I was just having this conversation, man. He was talking about how around the office, they were saying, I wonder who's the most genuine, loving artist that's out there today. Who's just a genuine, good dude? And he said, you know what I thought about, man? I bet Paul Janeway's a really great dude. And I told him, I was like, man, I just got off the phone with him.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no pretense with him.
No.
He's not faking it. He is legit maybe the nicest man I have ever talked
to. He's awfully nice, and only because I mentioned it when I talked to him. That just for people who don't know, I'm the entertainment writer here for the Times Free Press, so I've done many, many interviews over a lot of years. Derek Trucks and Susan Tedeschi are sincerely nice, normal people, as is Warren Haynes. But you're right. Paul, as you guys will hear in this interview, was so much fun, so funny, and just so genuine. And I've talked to him now three or four times again because of the job, and he's always been that way.
Really?
Yeah, the first time we spoke, he was just sort of taken off, and he was just completely humbled and surprised that people were showing up buying tickets. And I think you hear that a little bit in our conversation with him. But he's obviously, from touring with the Stones to the being on the David Letterman show, one of the greatest moments. And we talk about that. But just a super, super nice guy and so much fun to see.
And this is going to be a little different of a episode. We're going to break this up into two parts because he was so kind and generous with his time. He talked to us for like 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And mainly because I think that it's just so good. I don't really want to edit much of it. I just want to play it. So we thought the best idea was to break it up into two parts. The first part being today, and the next week we'll do part two. Part two will explain what he says at the end of the podcast, because he gets into some breaking news in next week's podcast, and I hope he doesn't break it before we do, because if we wait a week, we might blow it.
That's true. That's true.
But the reason why we want to talk to Paul today is because not only do we love him, and not only love the band, but this is a great Bonnaroo story.
Yeah.
He is an absolute great Bonnaroo story, because he, like Trevor from Moon Taxi, loved this festival so much, and it's meant so much to him. And playing the festival was a moment for him that he never thought that he would actually get.
Yeah. And you and I were both there. I remember that moment very clearly of them performing in that tent.
It was
this tent. Yeah. An afternoon show. The crowd was
Thursday evening. Thursday. Yeah. It was so hot.
So hot, but you could just see on his face, this was a moment for him. He has some great stories that you guys are going to hear.
I can't wait.
I haven't laughed that hard in an interview in a long time.
We asked you a few weeks ago for your Bonnaroo stories. This might be the best Bonnaroo story I've ever heard.
Yeah. If anyone out there can top his, I'm not sure that I want to hear it.
All right, let's do it. Paul Janeway from St. Paul and the Broken Bones. This week's featured guest on the What Podcast, a Bonnaroo podcast for Bonnarooians by Bonnarooians. Let's do it. Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing so great. It is such an honor to talk to you. I could not be a bigger fan of yours. Meeting you even at Bonnaroo years and years ago, your very first ever Bonnaroo, I was like a kid in a candy store. And I just remember everybody on my Instagram, when I took the photo with you back there in the media compound, they all said two things. It was A, who is that? And B, why is he holding a jar of honey? And I said, just wait until you find out about St. Paul and the Broken Bones. And that then turned into me following you guys around and seeing you guys 12 times in a year. 12 times
wow.
in a year.
Wow.
I couldn't be a bigger fan. I love you guys a lot.
Oh, good. Well, that's good to hear.
Hi, Paul. Barry Corder here as well. I'm a big fan, but I'm going to have to try to keep Brad at bay here.
I'm fanboying for a second.
Allow me to fanboy.
Hey, I'd rather be talking to someone that's a fan of ours than like, who the hell are these guys?
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I was walking off the stage at Bonnaroo 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and Billy Joel was walking onto the stage. And I don't know, there was a whole line of us walking off the stage, and Billy Joel was by himself as he walked up onto the stage. And I said, oh my God, there's Billy Joel. And I stopped dead in my tracks, and I looked at him, I said, Billy Joel, great work. That's all I got. I then realized at that moment, I had nothing to say to Billy Joel. I had absolutely no material, because I'm not that big of a fan. But I could talk to Paul Janeway all day if I could.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, well, I've had that problem too, because I didn't grow up with a lot of music, and I've talked to people and been like, hey, yeah.
You.
I got to imagine you. Did you grow up with music that you could even maybe meet the artist? Because I feel as though you and
Not
I...
Not really.
Exactly. I feel like you and I have a kindred spirit, because my selection at home is 60s soul. Whether it be Otis Clay or Otis Redding or Syl Johnson, those are the guys I listen to, and those guys ain't playing Bonnaroo very often.
No, it is weird, because the good thing is, like, though, when I get to meet, like, Booker T and Steve Cropper and those guys, that's when I'm like a kid in a candy store.
Who have you met that you fanboyed over?
Actually, you know, it's the most starstruck I've ever been. I'm actually a huge professional wrestling fan.
Okay.
And I sat next to Jerry the King Lawler.
Jerry Lawler. That's awesome.
Who is a Memphis legend, and I could not talk to him. My wife started crying laughing. I've met Elton John, the Rolling Stones, all these people, and I could not talk to Jerry the King Lawler. I one time followed Booker T in an airport by accident, though, because we were on the same flight, and his band actually came out to one of our shows in Australia.
Wow.
And that was pretty.
I have to say, I'm surprised that we've gone this far and Brad has not mentioned David Letterman.
What?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Brad is, talk about fanboy.
Well, he's my hero in life. If not for Dave Letterman, I would not be doing anything that I'm doing or the person that I am today. He is my absolute hero in every regard, in every piece of entertainment. He's the guy that changed not only comedy, but he changed television, he changed entertainment. The fact that you guys got such a big break from Letterman. I mean, I wasn't going to bring it up, Barry, but if you really want to talk about Dave, I can talk about Dave.
I'm wondering if I'm going to get to speak during this whole conversation.
that was pretty remarkable because they had told us that he was a fan of ours, and I just kind of shrugged it off as lip service. And you know what I mean? Because, like, oh, such a big fan.
Yeah, says that to everybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. Says that to everybody. And then they were like, look, he is a really big fan. Like, he could ask for an encore, and he rarely does it, but it is possible. So would y'all be okay with that? And we were like, of course, da-da-da. So then he goes into that long rant before the show, before our performance, and I was just like, surely they're going to cut this out. Surely. And they didn't, and it became a thing, and we, you know, it was really quite remarkable.
For people out there listening who haven't seen it, Google it. It's one of the most remarkable late-night television moments I've ever seen because they just gushed.
I went 20 some odd years without missing an episode of Dave. I watched him every single night for 20 some odd years.
It's a real sickness he has.
I know, it's pretty crazy. But I'll tell you, the only time I ever remember him doing something like that was back in the late night days with James Brown.
Yeah.
When James Brown did Late Night, that was the only time I remember him saying to somebody, I need you to keep going. Do it again. Keep going.
It was one of those things where our career was doing pretty good. I mean, but the record cycle, as you know, was kind of winding down. And we were like, okay, we were getting ready to start to write the next record.
Mm-hmm.
And then that happened, and it like took us another level. And we were like, I mean, it changed our career.
There's something about, and I hope that I can talk to you maybe as somebody who maybe is a little out of body experience with you for a second, but it's like Paul on stage is a different human being. And it's ironic that you are such a fan of pro wrestling because it is almost like a character that you're doing on stage that is just infectious.
I mean, it's when you hit the zone, you know what I mean? Like, it's a different animal. As I like to say, it's my hour and a half of therapy a night.
Let me go back because, Paul, you and I, this is probably our fourth or fifth conversation, which is one of the things I love about my job is sort of discovering maybe a new band or seeing a band at the beginning and then sort of following them the arc, so to speak. The first time I think we talked was after a Scenic City Roots show that you did here at Track 29. Is that the video from that? You were right around the same time the Alabama Shakes played there, and both videos became huge sort of sensations. It was like, where did these people come from? And then you were back. I don't remember which one, but you've been back for Riverbend. You've been back for two or three other things, but we also talked at Bonnaroo. You told me a great story, which is one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you. You actually worked Bonnaroo, right? Didn't you volunteer?
I did. I had actually, the first time I went, slept in my car. I was working at a tanning bed.
What?
No joke. I'm the most untanned person on the planet.
You're like a freshly peeled apple.
I think Radiohead was playing. It was the first year Radiohead played. And I was working at a tanning bed because I didn't have a car, so I had to drive. I had to walk there. It was the closest thing I could walk to. And so I spent my whole month's paycheck on a Bonnaroo ticket to go see Radiohead. And I slept in my car, and that was terrible. So the year that Jay-Z and Stevie Wonder played.
God, that was my favorite year of Bonnaroo history, man.
Yeah, I couldn't afford a ticket. And, you know, the whole thing that they dangle is like, hey, you can work security.
Yeah.
We'll pay you, like, minimum wage. But guess what? You do a 12-hour shift, and then you get 12 hours off. And you're like, this sounds amazing. This is an amazing deal. Uh-huh. It's not an amazing deal.
That 12 hours off is pretty good.
The 12, sure, but when I got sun poison on Thursday on my leg, I was just like, this is awful. So what is funny, though, I was like, so the first night I was so tired, I was like, I can't go see it. But Stevie Wonder and Jay-Z were playing, and I was like, all right, I'm going to go. I got to go see that. So I started watching Stevie Wonder. He gets off. Jay-Z's about to go on. I'm trying to get close. And I feel something warm running down my back. And I turn around, and there is a giant man who is on some sort of drugs peeing on my back.
Oh, my God.
Not kidding.
Oh, my God.
I am not kidding. And I turn around, and I was like, what's going on right now? And by the like, what is my life come to? And then I turn back around. And the guy's already, like, shot out. And I was just like, you know what? I've got sun poison. This is awful. I'm going to watch Jay-Z with pee on my back. And that's what I did.
The delicate touch of Paul Janeway. When a man is peeing on him, he turns around and he says, hey, so what's going on here?
Yeah. he was a giant. What was I going to do?
What was your post? What did you actually have to do at Bonnaroo? What was your job?
I was there. There was like a VIP, with a VIP, like I was at the door, or at the gate.
You're right.
Door, gate, yeah. And it was right. And so there was two things I had to do. You know, check credentials, and then also also make sure that hippies did not stay in the road, because there was trucks going, you know, 40 miles an hour,
yeah,
back right there.
Yeah.
And so people just like, man, just chill out. And I'm like, you're going to die.
You're going to die. Road. That was right around the same year the guy got hit by the porta potty cleanup truck, wasn't it?
That's my point. And yeah. So what was so magical for me, I even get like kind of emotional thinking about it, because doing that and Bonnaroo being so close to Birmingham and me, you know what I mean? Like spending all my money on a Bonnaroo ticket, and then in 2014 getting to play it. It was honestly like I there are a few points in my life or professionally in this that I vividly remember, and that's one of them, because it was just, it felt like a dream. It felt like I remember being a patron and sitting and going, I think I sing better than they do.
Mm.
Then having a moment and then being on stage. I just tried to soak it in all day.
Thank you so much, Bonnaroo. We are St. Paul and a Broken Bones from Birmingham, Alabama.
Brad and I mentioned last week, talking about you coming on, that 2014, and the fact that you guys came out about 15 minutes early to do a sound check, and he and I both commented, we remember you standing in the middle of the stage, mm-hmm. staring out at the crowd, just yeah. sort of smiling, taking it all in, yeah. as you just said.
Yeah. Still to this, you know, it's like you have a few moments in your career and in this that you go, it could stop right after this, and I would have accomplished everything I initially went out to accomplish. It was a dream. That's why, you know, Bonnaroo will always have that special place with me.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like I said, you and I have talked before, and I just love this whole progression of things. You were actually thinking you were going to become a pastor, right, or a preacher, while you were working at the tanning bed. But that was the goal.
Well, I mean, before that, that was the goal.
Okay.
The tanning bed era is not a not a good time in my life. I was not doing so hot. But before that time, that's really what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a preacher. I wanted to be a pastor. Like, this whole idea of playing music for a living was not something I ever thought I was going to do. Like, this isn't, for me, doing this is not a dream that I've accomplished. It's a realization. They're like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, or feeling like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But I wanted, I mean, my whole goal from like when I was like 8 till about probably 21 was I wanted to be a preacher. And I worked towards that. I would speak in church when I was like 12 or 13, learned how to work a crowd. And I thought that's what I wanted to do.
Another place where me and Paul almost run parallel tracks. I don't know if you even know this. Barry, one of my best friends in the world, doesn't even know this. Do you know when I was 16, I won a preaching competition?
I did not.
I was going to be a preacher, and I realized that it wasn't the message that I was giving, it was the power of a crowd that I had that I liked so much about it. And I wonder, like, when was that moment for you? Was it, had you already had a band? Did you just take some guys from the church band? When did it make that turn?
Well, I always played music in church, but I never really thought, I actually had a pastor or a preacher who was kind of a mentor, and he kind of, I think it was his idea of humbling me, because he could tell I really was attracted to being on stage and that kind of thing. He always kind of said, you know, hey, you know, you're not that good of a singer, and you're not that good at this, and so I still, it's really bizarre, I still to this day struggle with, even though I do this for a living, struggling, going, I'm not good enough.
Did you figure out later that he was probably trying to keep you, he wanted to be the front singer, he was trying to keep you down?
It was part of it, and so it took me a really long time to gain any sort of confidence to play in front of people. So I started, you know, once I kind of was like, all right, this preacher thing, not really for me, you know, I was kind of understanding, like, I love the performance aspect of it. I was still playing guitar and writing songs and singing, so I'd go to I'd go to open mic nights in Birmingham at some, you know, some bar somewhere, and I'd say, hey, you know, da 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 da. And I started being like, man, I'm getting a reaction out of these people. So there's something to this. I'm doing something right. And so then I finally was like, well, maybe I should record it. And so I started, you know, I had this old camcorder that I would just place on the bathtub, and I would just sit not naked on the toilet, but I'd sit on the toilet and play my guitar and sing, and that's how I'd hear myself back. And I was like, man, I figured out, all right, I'd start writing songs that way. And then I got in a band because I just needed friends. I didn't have any friends. And that's how I ended up.
Well, you're not going to meet a lot of people at the tanning bed, that's for sure, Paul.
There was always an old lady that would come out in her underwear like, I don't know how this thing works. And so, and you're just like, all right. So and that's how I met Jesse, who's the bass player in this band. And it's been almost a decade now, and we've been best friends since then. And he really truly is the reason this band exists, because he heard something in me that I wasn't confident enough about, and he was like, man, we got to push. And he, if it weren't for, he knew everybody, and if it weren't for him, this wouldn't have happened.
I had a conversation, so before I get a little bit OCD, I get obsessive with artists, and before I followed you guys around the country for about a year and a half, I did the same thing with the Alabama Shakes, because I fell deeply in love with Brittany Howard, and I love that band so much, and they still to this day my favorite band of all time. I had a conversation, because I saw them maybe 15 times in a year. I had a conversation one night with Ben Tanner, who's the keyboardist for the Alabama Shakes. This is maybe 2013, mm-hmm. Maybe 2012, right after Boys and Girls was released or something like that. I can't remember exactly the timeline, because he was the only one of the band that would talk to me. So I was just
without police.
Right. I was just shooting the shit with him for a little bit, and he's like, I was like, so what are you doing? What do you do when you're not doing this band thing? He's like, well, you know, I've got this project that I'm doing right now. It might be the best thing I've ever done in my career. And I'm like, oh, cool. What is it? He's like, well, I'm producing this album for this band called St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Cool.
And I said, no. Okay, sure. See you later. And then turns out,
yeah, that's cool.
You got half the city. You got half the city written.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's all incestuous in Alabama.
There's something that happened somewhere in 2010, 2011, 2012 with Alabama music culture, and it just blew up. It's like a band that came out of Alabama couldn't fail.
Yeah, it was you guys and the Shakes and the Secret Sisters all sort of hit.
Well, you had John Paul, the Civil Wars. You've had you've had Jason
Isbell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's bizarre, for me, it was one of those things where this is just me personally, like, I'm a competitive person. We were working on this stuff, and then the Shakes showed up, and we were like, oh, shit. Like, this is like, yeah, all right. You're just like, man, because, you know, and those folks are, I love those people. But for me, it's like, man, so we'd all kind of known each other, and Rowan, who's a guitar player, is from Muscle Shoals. And for me, I just, this state is too small. I just pull for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I'm competitive, but it's a friendly competition. Mm-hmm. You know, like when they make a great record, I want to make a great record. Or when, you know what I mean? When I hear all these musicians, and I want them to succeed. And so what's bizarre is that we had known Ben, and we weren't sure Ben was playing. We had heard that Ben had kind of said, because Ben was, he was kind of later addition,
right,
playing keys.
Right. And he was not part of the original Shakes lineup. That's
he's not, yeah. So he was like, he was doing that, and we were like, you know, they were starting a record label, him and John Paul and a guy named Will Trapp starting Single Lock Records. And we were just like, you want to give us money and we record a record? Hell yeah. You know, like, we didn't know. I mean, nobody cared about us. And he did. And it changed our lives, and it changed Ben's lives.
You go make Sea of Noise. How did that process change? Because obviously you change producers, and you try to do a little bit different and try and grow as an artist. What was the big change for you, at least artist-wise, from one album to the next?
I started making money.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's one thing, and which was difficult because I was so used to making minimum wage, and over a decade, and now I have money. And I have people caring about what we do. I almost quit, to be honest with you, after half the city, because I didn't like having money. It was just so weird for me. I was trying to figure out what I needed to do with my life, and it's not what, you know, my wife, when we first met, I went back to school and I was going to be an accountant. You know, I went back to school late in my life, or later, and she didn't sign up for that. Wow. And I almost quit. But for me, it was one of those things. I was like, I have to kind of keep pushing forward, you know, because if I just, if we, it's like if we make half the city too, I think I would have been done.
You made one of the best albums of the decade. And then afterwards you said, nah, I don't know if I can make any money on this.
I was making money. It was just, that was the problem. It made me incredibly uncomfortable.
Oh, right, right. You didn't like, okay.
You know, it made me just feel like I was stealing.
It happened pretty quick, right?
I mean, it happened quick, exactly. And so you start going, all right, what kind of artists are we going to be?
You can start to see those changes, though, in Sea of Noise. Like, I don't know a song that you guys made in Half the City that had, at least to me, the societal impact and an acknowledgement of whatever's happening in the world, like Is It Me? I think Is It Me is the best song you guys have ever written.
I think that or I'll Be Your Woman.
It's just so different than anything else that you guys have written, because it is about something that is outside of you. It's about society, and it is, boy, you can pull whatever sort of threads of current day politics out of that song if you wanted to.
Right, and I think that was the point is to, so for me, so I'm going through this identity crisis, and I read a book by Bryan Stevenson called Just Mercy, and it's a beautiful book about a thing called the Equal Justice Initiative that started in Montgomery, Alabama, and started in the state of Alabama. And it moved me to a way that I was like, I have to work through this. I have to work through this Southern identity in these modern times. And I don't think I am not a philosophy major. I am not an expert at a lot of things. So for me, it was a situation where you ask a lot of questions and not give a lot of answers. And that's what songs all over that record are that way. And it was a risk. It was a risk for us because I didn't want to alienate anybody, but at the same time, I had to do it. It had to, like, I think we'll be done with the photo, you know, the cover and all that stuff in about a couple weeks with the new record. It's so interesting talking to, like, we're on Columbia now, and it's so interesting talking to them about the commercial, like, Half the City was commercially more successful. Mm-hmm. Than Sea of Noise. And Sea of Noise was critically more successful than Half the City. They talk about, you know, sales and all this kind of stuff. And Sea of Noise has done well. It's not done as well as Half the City. But for us, and I have to tell them this constantly, we don't exist as a band if Sea of Noise does not come out, if we don't go through that process. And now I feel incredibly liberated. And, like, it's weird. But that was having hindsight now with that record, that was a very difficult record to get through because, I mean, some of the guys are just like, oh, my God, we're about to commit career suicide. Kind of a tackling societal thing, where Half the City was not that. It was kind of a heartbreak, Let's Dance record.
Next week, part two of our conversation with Paul Janeway from St. Paul and the Broken Bones. This is the What Podcast. That's Barry. I'm Brad. I just love him so much. I just want to be his best friend.
Wasn't that fun?
I just, like, he's my Oprah.
Yeah.
He's just got that thing that I want to be around all the time.
He does. I loved your comment about him looking like a peeled apple. That's pretty hilarious.
Peeled apple, yeah. Well, that's what Mom used to call me, so I can relate. So next week, this is what we're going to do next week. It's going to be part two of this conversation with Paul. Yes. So not only does he break news in the conversation that we had that we'll play next week, but he also has some big news about the show at Bonner. You ask him a great question about what's the new show going to be like.
Right. He gets into that. And I wanted to mention, too, we've threatened to do this for a while, and I think this would be a good time, is we hope to call some of you guys,
some of
you listeners that have reached out and said you'd be willing and happy to. And so we'll set up some times to have you guys call, and we'll record those, and we'll probably run some of those next week,
too. Yeah, and if you'd like to be featured on the podcast, drop us a comment. TheWhatPodcast.com. Leave us your comment, and we'll try and get in touch with you this week.
Yeah.
You want to do that? That's
fun. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I brag about it to you all the time. I think we're now in 26 countries.
Oh, it's got 26.
Yeah.
You're starting to sound like Bazzy. You know the numbers.
I just think that's so cool. I love looking at the stats and the emails, and didn't know where this was going to go.
Honestly, it's because it's not because we don't like a pat on the back. It's because the people that interact with us, they love Bonnaroo.
Yeah,
And for some reason, it all ties us together. It's like being a NAM.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
that's right.
You just know a vet.
just by looking in their eyes.
Survivor syndrome. Yeah, the comments are great. I mean, the one we got the other day, somebody said they don't think they'll ever again experience anything like 90,000 people singing Hey Jude.
It was a great moment.
Which was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I think it was Randy who said it, but absolutely, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yep. That
took me right back.
Took me right back.
You speak the language. I can talk to you.
I told him, we woke up that next morning sitting around the camp at Camp Nut Butter and just talked about it.
We literally had a guy at camp after the Paul McCartney show. He packed his stuff up and left because he said, plup, more than I can do here. I don't need to see anything else this weekend.
Yeah.
Literally just left.
I'm done.
And so are we. We are done as well. Give us your comments at thewhatpodcast.com. You can find Barry on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle there, Barry?
Barry JC.
All right. I'm at Brad Stinks. Thewhatpodcast.com or thewhat_podcast on Twitter. We'll talk to you and Paul again next week on The What.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artist playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.